ॐ सहना पवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 Verse 94. Natu brahmanyatishayam, natu brahmanyatishayam, palam kuryat katadivat, palam kuryat katadivat. Stitaha api asau chirabhasaha brahmani eki bhavet param, natu brahmani atishayam palam kuryat gata Adi Vat. Okay, we're still on the section talking about how knowledge takes place in the mind. And so we've introduced a couple of terms. One is Vritti Vyapti, and one is Pala Vyapti, and the third is Chidabhasa. Okay. So these terms have to be understood. So let me re-explain these terms, and then we're going to talk about why when knowledge of the self takes place, we only use vritti-vyapti and not pala-vyapti. That's what this verse is about. So let me explain the terms again. In my experience as a jiva, just as an individual, I am experiencing this world through my sense organs that form a thought modification in the mind, which we call vritti. The thought modification is called a vritti. So now just say, if I'm just thinking about perception, through perception my mind forms a thought modification called a vritti, and that vritti, when it is formed, it is known. It's known because consciousness illumines the vritti, and that luminosity of the vritti by consciousness is called the chidabhasa. It's the reflection of consciousness in the vritti. You see what I mean? You know something. If I use my sense organs to see something, what happens is they form a thought modification, which then I know. I'm the sakshi of the thought modification. And so when we're trying to analyze how knowledge actually, what is actually taking place in the mind when that knowledge happens, how do we break it down into its components? We say, well, first of all, through my sense organs, for instance, through my sense organs, my mind pervades the object. Right? The vritti pervades, the thought modification pervades the object. That's why with my sense organs open, my mind now pervades this room in the sense that it assumes the form of this room. And then that form is known. Why we say that? Because think, if your sense organs are open, your eyes are open and looking, but you're daydreaming. If you're daydreaming, then at that time the vrittis of the mind are assuming the form of the daydream. And then the daydream is known. And so if I'm using the sense organs to gain knowledge of the room, to experience this room, or to experience all of you, then my mind has to be present to the sense organs in order to have the vritti assume the form of what the eyes are pointed at. And that assuming the form is what we call vritti vyapti. Vyapti means to pervade. Vritti means the thought modification. So in any knowledge that takes place in the world, what happens is that, first of all, we have to say, well, the mind assumes the form of whatever I'm knowing, whatever I'm perceiving, and then that form is illumined, right? Because whatever thought modification that is in the mind, that thought modification is known. What makes it known is the reflection of consciousness in the mind. So every thought, even if you do like a meditation and you watch your thoughts, one thought comes and the next thought comes and the next thought comes. Every thought is known. That the factor, what we label that knownness of the thought, that's what we call chidabhasa, the reflection of awareness in the thought. That's what allows the thought to be known. It's a technical term. And so we say when knowledge takes place, these two functions have to happen. The vritti-vyapti, the mind has to pervade the object, and then that object has to be known. Right? Because otherwise, if it weren't known, it would just be inert. So two things are required. But then they say this is how knowledge takes place in the world in terms of a subject-object relationship. But then now there's been a big discussion on how, in terms of self-knowledge, using the teaching methodology of the Upanishad, what happens is the mind is directed toward the recognition of the subject, the consciousness that illumines the mind. Right? And so the subject is actually now going to be the object of knowledge, not the painting or the tree or any external object. The object of knowledge is going for the mind is going to be the subject. So how does that happen when we're doing this teaching, the Vedanta teaching methodology? Well, it says, what happens is, as this teaching methodology takes place, where the mind is directed away from the objects of experience through not this, not this, not this. In other words, if I want to know myself, I have to first decaffect myself from anything that's objectifiable in a subject-object relationship. I have to bring that, I have to have viveka between that subject and object. I have to be able to discriminate. I'm aware of this object, therefore I'm not the object. I'm watching the object, therefore I'm not the object. Simple logic. But I can't just bring in that logic, I have to apply that logic to the experiential reality of myself being aware of the object. So I'm aware of the body, therefore I'm not the body. I'm aware of my mind, therefore I'm not my mind. I'm aware of the sense organs or sense perceptions, therefore I'm not the sense perceptions. So I'm noticing the subject-object differentiation as being a way of experiencing my inner reality, right? The reality between myself and my mind, myself and the thoughts of my mind. So this teaching methodology is taking place, and after all of this neti neti, not this, not this, not this, has fulfilled itself to the point that there is nothing else I can negate. There are no other objects left to negate. Then we look at, there's a positive assertion toward the one that is left, which is the nature of the sakshi, which is just consciousness itself. Consciousness now, not identified, not superimposed on the mind or the sense organs of the body, but just consciousness, just being itself. Now, when that is pointed out, if your mind has followed along this teaching methodology, what happens is now the mind has a vritti-vyapti. It pervades the mind stuff, the sattva, the mind, pervades the object that's being pointed out. The object in this case that is being pointed out by the Mahavakya is the subject, is consciousness itself. And so the mind has a vritti-vyapti. It pervades consciousness itself. And once it does that, there is no need for a reflection of consciousness, because consciousness is the very subject. And so now you don't need consciousness to illumine that subject. Consciousness itself is the subject. And so the chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, is not needed in this type of knowledge, in self-knowledge. The chidabhasa is not needed. So now, but look at what happens if in this case. For an object of knowledge like the painting or the bookcase, the mind assumes the object and then you know the object, subject-object relationship. You don't take yourself to be the object. I'm aware of the object. Just like any thought in your mind, you're aware of it. Comes and it goes, you're aware of it. You have a subject-object relationship with it. You can describe it, etc. When the knowledge, then the object of knowledge is the subject itself, is consciousness itself, then the vritti-vyapti occurs. There now no longer is, there is no subject-object relationship, because the object is the subject, right? The object of the mind is not the painting. or is not something other. The object of the mind now is the very subject. And so where is the line now between the subject that illumines the subject? So that's what we call akhanda akara vritti. It's a non-dual. It's a vritti which has no subject-object because it's so totally pervaded the subject. So the vritti is what we call nirvikalpa samadhi, sometimes called, because no subject-object relationship. Akhanda akara vritti, the thought modification, is in the form of being undivided between subject-object. And so this type of knowledge is what allows me to recognize, the mind to recognize, the self, to recognize myself in my own swarupa, in my own nature, as just the conscious Satchidananda. This is my nature. I am absolutely free of all of these upadis, all of these conditioning adjuncts that I have taken myself to be one with. I recognize myself just as pure being, pure consciousness. And then when the mind comes back from that akhanda akara vritti, here's the body, here's the mind, here's the universe. But now I know the freedom of the self, which is pervasive to the body, to the mind, the sense organs. It's because I've recognized myself without it. Right? It's not that I've gone away to recognize myself. It's that the self that is here, that has always been without it, now I just recognize it in its pure form. And then when the sense organs, the mind, the eyes, all of the perception of the world comes back, it doesn't cover the freedom of my own being. And so there we say jnanam has taken place because the viveka, I have recognized myself in my pure form, and now in the midst of the creation, I recognize myself in my pure form, just as pure being, in spite of the existence of the creation. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't stop me from being me now that I know who I am. So here, it's explaining this. He says, when the knowledge of Brahman takes place, he says, even though at this time the chidabhasaha, it says stittaha api asau chidabhasaha, says, even though this chidabhasa is abiding there, when this akhandakara vritti takes place, when there's vritti vyapti, the chidabhasa is still there. I'll explain this in a minute, just understand the Sanskrit first. Even though it's still there, it has Eki Bhavet. It has become one with Brahman. In Brahman, it has become one with Brahman. Okay? So now, let me explain again. The mind, by its very nature, reflects consciousness, whether it be a memory or an imagination or a thought or the ahankara or an emotion. Doesn't make any difference what it is. Any vritti, by its nature, reflects consciousness. That's what allows it to be known. So even if it's a perception or an inference, any means of knowledge, whatever takes place in the mind, by nature reflects consciousness. That's what we call the chidabhasa. In gaining knowledge of the world, we need the vritti vyapti, we need the mind to pervade the object, and we need that object to be reflect consciousness, otherwise it can't be known. Because the maya, all of the objects in the world, are of their own accord, just inert. They're objects of name and form. They're not. It's not a vritti vyapti of consciousness itself. It's a vritti vyapti pervasion of namarupa, of name and form. And so you need the consciousness to illumine that in order for it to be known. Now here in self-knowledge, the vritti vyapti takes place, the pervasion, because of the positive assertion, you are that, by the Mahavakya. The vritti vyapti takes place where the mind has for its object the subject. But that mind doesn't go into non-existence. It is still there. And the mind, by its own nature, reflects consciousness. So there will be chidabhasa, as long as the mind is there. But the chidabhasa is irrelevant. The reflection of consciousness by the mind is irrelevant because the object of the mind is consciousness. And so the example that's often used, and they use it in this bhasha here, he says, it's just like if you take a light, like the light of a lamp, and put it in the middle of a brilliant flame. Imagine, you know, on a brilliant day with the sun shining, absolutely brilliant, blazing flame. You put the lamp in the middle of it. The lamp doesn't have any function to fulfill because the luminosity is being filled by the brilliant flame. You see what I mean? So the chit-abhasa, the reflection of consciousness, is totally irrelevant when the vritti-vyapti is of consciousness itself. So it says, that chit-abhasa, it's still there, but it's become one. It's become one with the self, with Brahman. Then it goes, natu brahmani atishayam palam kuryat. Gatariva. He says, but that is not going kuryat. That chit-abhasa won't give any atishayam palam, any extraordinary result. Right? It's not going to give any new knowledge. The chit-abhasa won't give any new knowledge in Brahman. He says, gatariva. Like it would if it were a pot. If it were a pot, right? If the vritti-vyapti was of a pot, then the chit-abhasa is important. It allows this pot to be manifest, to be known. It's given something new. But when the vritti-vyapti is of consciousness, what new thing is the chit-abhasa going to give? What is it going to allow to take place? Nothing. Because the subject of the chit-abhasa is already there by the vritti-vyapti. So this is their argument. It's technical, but it's also important. So let's go on. Aprameyam anadicca aprameyam anadimcha ityatra shrutyedamiritam ityatra shrutyedamiritam manasai vedam aptavyam manasai vedam aptavyam iti divyapyatashrita iti divyapyatashrita. Okay, he goes on. Aprameyam anadim cha iti atra shrutya idam iritam manasa eva idam aptavyam iti divyapyata shruta. There are shrutis that say what can seem as contradictory things. There's one shruti that says, part of the shruti says, aprameyam, talking about Brahman. Brahman is aprameyam and anadi, anadim. Aprameyam, and then that's the key word that's being in operation. Brahman, this Brahman is aprameyam. It's not. It can't be objectified. It can't be known. Brahman cannot be known. It's cannot be an object of knowledge. It's aprameyam. It's anadi. It's beginningless, and it's not something that can be known. Prama means knowledge. Prameya, something that's aprameya, something not available for knowledge. It's unknowable. Literally, Brahman is unknowable. So it says, this has been said by the Shruti. Sorry. In reference to this, it says, hatra here, shrutya, by the Shruti, idam iritam, this has been said. But then again, manasa eva idam aptavyam iti. It also says, this is something that is obtained by the mind alone. This is gained by the mind alone. One says, it can't be known, it can't be objectified. The other says, this is gained by the mind alone. So how is that? So it goes, here, divyapyata shruta. This vritti-vyapti, the state of vritti-vyapti is what's being said. Boy. I've got something in my throat.
Want some more tea?
I still have a few more sips. I might be able to get by with it. But You know, even in Neo-Vedanta, in yoga and all of these things that come over here, people always talk about how the self is unknowable. The self cannot be objectified. It's not an object of knowledge. It's not knowable. Therefore, you have to shut down the mind. In order to know it, then, to have the experience of the self, you have to resolve the mind. Because the self is not an object, it's unknowable. Well, there's truth in it, but you have to understand what it means and how the self actually then is known in terms of gaining knowledge of the self. It's aprameya. It's unknowable in the sense that it cannot be objectified, and there can be no what we call palavyapti. Palavyapti means the mind assumes the form of the self, and then that self is known. It's like the mind takes the form of a pot, vrittivyapti, and that is known. Here, aprameya, that cannot happen here. The mind can't take the form of the self so that the self can be known. And that, it won't happen. But then it is only gained by the mind. That's the vrittivyapti. Because here, in the positive assertion, what happens is that the mind assumes the form of the Atma, but in assuming the form of the self, there can't be any palavyapti for there to be a subject-object relationship so that the self can be known. You see what I mean? It can't be known like a pot. Can't be known like an object. But it can be known completely by the mind in this way. So this is the key understanding. The Atma itself is the self-evident consciousness. That is responsible for illumining the mind. So if you know the painting, the mind has assumed the form of the painting, and because of consciousness illumining it, the painting is known. Right? And so therefore the painting is prameya. It can be an object of knowledge for me. But how can consciousness itself be an object of knowledge for myself? Because then who's illumining it? I can't be an object of knowledge. The consciousness cannot be an object of knowledge for consciousness, because it already is consciousness. Then, so how to divide it? The consciousness splits in half, and as the subject knows the object consciousness. There can't be a subject-object relationship in consciousness. But now the situation is this. This consciousness is the self-evident consciousness that illumines the vritti. So if I'm going to say no a pot, it is this self-evident consciousness that reflects in the vritti that allows the pot to be known. Now this self-evident consciousness, when knowledge takes place, is being pervaded by the mind. Right? The mind, it becomes the subject matter, the content of the mind. It's content of the mind anyway. Right? Consciousness is never away from the mind. But now the mind is not assuming the form of a pot or of an object. It's falling back on itself. That's the vrittivyapti. But now the thing is, this consciousness is already luminous. It's already self-evident. So what has happened is, it is not that I'm gaining a subject-object relationship with a consciousness, because I can't do that. It's not objectifiable. But I have, by having the vrittivyapti, I have now removed all of the ignorance of myself in terms of the nature of consciousness, right? Because up until that time, consciousness had been assumed to be one with the mind, to be one with the sense organs, to be one with the perceptions, one with the moods, one with the thoughts. When the vrittivyapti takes place, I am just consciousness itself. And consciousness itself is self-luminous, so there's no new experience. There's just a removal from the self-experience of all of the things that have been identified with it. So that's the important key. There is no new experience of myself. There is the new experience only in the sense that the things that I'd normally taken to be one with me, like my mind, the different thoughts and moods, emotions of the mind, the physical body, I recognize that my being is independent of all of that. And so that's that vritti vyapti is what has allowed that to happen. At the same time, there's not going to be any subject saying, oh, look at me. Because no subject-object relationship. I just simply am me without the experience of duality. So that's why it says in when we have these contradictory phrases, which are throughout the Upanishads, the self cannot be an object of knowledge, you're talking about the Pulavyapti. There can't be a subject-object relationship. But then it can only be known by the mind, Vritti-Vyapti. Because, understand this too, the self has to be known because there's self-ignorance there. This is tricky because what we call as the self already is known in what we call samanya jnanam. The general self-experience, your self-experience is already known. It's self-evident. Like whenever you say, I am a conscious being, those words, I am a conscious being, the consciousness and the being, which is your self-evident experience, that me experience, that is known. You know, you can't say I'm not a conscious being. So the conscious being is known. That's samanya jnana. Everybody has it, general, I am a conscious being. You just don't know what that conscious being is. You don't know if it's a product of the body. You don't know if it transmigrates. You don't know if it dies when the body dies. You don't know what the relationship of this conscious being is to this conscious being. You don't know the relationship of this conscious being to God, to the universe. But you do have the general self-experience of conscious being. But that doesn't help you in terms of liberation. Because if you say, I am a conscious being and I must be, but I don't know where I come from. And I don't know who I am. And I don't know if I'm subject to birth and death. I have no idea. I don't know if I'm an epiphenomena of the physical body. I don't know. But I know the conscious being. Okay. But when knowledge takes place, this conscious being that I have the samanya jnanam of, as I am a conscious being, I now have, samanya means general. I now have vishesha jnanam. Vishesha means particular. That this conscious being that I am is free from time, is free from change, is the substrate reality of the whole creation. That's when I get the vishesha jnanam, right? So then, but I'm getting the particular knowledge of what I had the general knowledge of, right? Of what I had the general experience of as me. I now recognize that this me is Brahman. That's the vishesha jnana. You see what I mean? It's so important because that's why this palavyapti and vrittivyapti is so important to understand, because we're always seeking for an experience of the self. You can't have an experience, another experience of the self. The self experience is already completely here. So what has to happen is that the limiting adjuncts that have been superimposed on the self have to be released from that. You know, released from the ajnana, the ignorance that have caused you to take yourself to be what you actually look at, what comes and goes in your consciousness. You've misidentified yourself with these things, this changing phenomena. And so that has to, the mind has to be brought into a state of recognition to recognize itself as changing phenomena, to recognize the sense organs as changing, the body as changing, all of the perceptions as changing, and to recognize myself as the conscious being, which is the changeless substrate reality of all of that, that I have to recognize. Until then, I am mixed up with everything else. So knowledge has to unmix me. Right? It's not creating a new me. It's the viveka. It's differentiating me from the mitya. So that's what has to happen here. So this vritti-vyapti and pala-vyapti that seem contradictory, right? These terms seem contradictory throughout. are not contradictory at all once we understand these two terms, pala-vyapti and vritti-vyapti. The Atma can't be known as an object, right? But it can only be known by the mind, because it's the mind that is the one that's ignorant of it. And in one sense, it's not known by the mind because it's already self-evident. It, because of it, everything is known. But the mind is the one that's suffering from ignorance. And that one needs a vritti-vyapti in order to remove the ignorance. Okay? Let's go on to the next one. Atmanam cheti janiyat. Atmanam cheti janiyat. Ayam asmiti bhakyataha. Ayam asmiti bhakyataha. Brahmatma vyakti mulikya. Brahmatma vyakti mulikya. Yo bodha so bhidiyate. Yo bodha so bhidiyate. Atmanam chet vijaniyat ayam asmi iti vakitaha. Brahma atma vyaktim ulakya yaha bodha saha abhidiyate. It says, Atmanam chet vijaniyat ayamasmi iti vakyataha. This is the first verse of chapter 7. This whole 300 verses are on an analysis of this one verse. And so now he's bringing us back, saying, okay, we've done a lot of this now. So he says, here's the first line of this verse that we're analyzing. Atmanam chet vijaniyat. If a person should know the self, Atmanam chet if vijaniyat, if a person should know the Atma as what? Ayam asmi, I am this. If you should know yourself, the self, as I am this, that means that the I am this is the direct immediate knowledge, not I am that. When you say I am this, the this is immediate. So I recognize myself as I am this means I'm Satyam Jnanam Anuttam Brahmam, I'm limitless. My being is changeless, my being is limitless, my being is Brahman. So when you know yourself like this, that I am Brahman, right? I am this, that this stands for the aproksha, the direct immediate knowledge. So when you know myself directly immediately as I am this, thus vakyataha, from this statement, from this vakya, brahmatma vyaktim ulikya. Having understood, now he says what that means, to have known that I am this. Having known immediately, aparoksha, that the vyakti means the swarupa of myself, the atma, is Brahman. Having had the direct, immediate recognizing, means I recognize, I have the direct, immediate underseeing that this atma, that this self is infinite, that this being is Brahman, is infinite, is changeless. So ulekya means, it's an indeclinable past participle, it means to actually see something, to recognize it. So what am I recognizing? Brahma Atma Vyaktim. Vyaktim means swarupam. So I'm recognizing that my swarupa, the nature of myself, is limitless Brahman. So he says, it is that knowledge that is said here, is being said. Said where? In this vakya that we're analyzing. The vakya that says, the statement, vakya means statement. This statement that says, Atmanam chet vijaniyat ayamasmi iti. It is this direct, immediate recognition of myself as Brahman that is meant by this first part of the statement that we're analyzing that says, if one should know the Atma as I am this. If one should know yourself as I am this. It is this that we've spent all of these verses after verse after verse analyzing how this direct immediate knowledge takes place. It is this aparoksha jnanam of myself as Brahman that takes place through this akhandakara vritti, this limitless vritti that is brought about by vritti vyakti that gives me the aparoksha jnanam. It is this direct immediate recognition that is meant by this statement, if one should know that the Atma, if one should know myself as I am this. And the next line says something like, then what's to worry about? Why do I worry about this world? Why do I worry about the body? What's my concern then if I know that myself is limitless? So now he feels now, all right, we've explained this first portion of this verse. Okay. Let's do the next one. Astu bodho parokshatra, astu bodho parokshatra, Mahavakya tathapyasa. Mahavakya tathapyasa. Nadvidda shravanadinam. Nadvidda shravanadinam. Acharya punariranat. Acharya punariranat. Astu. Bodhaha. Aparokshaha. Atra. Mahavakyat. Tata api asau. Na dridaha shravana adinam acharyahi punar iranat. This is the question, the Bhasha, they introduced this for, oh, let me do the Sunday first. No, just there, okay. In the Bhasha, they introduced this verse with a doubt. The doubt is, okay, this knowledge can approach a gnana takes place, but I don't remember it. you say this takes place right at the time of teaching and you see it, you know, but then it doesn't become dhrita gnanam. I don't get, nishta, you know.
Slippery.
Yeah, it slips away. So what is that about? You know, if you say it's aparoksha jnanam, but it doesn't stay, why not? Right? So he has to answer that. Because everybody, otherwise you think you don't value what you've seen. You have to understand why you can see it and you get it, you recognize it, but then you have doubts. What is that? You know, that makes that nishta, what we call jnana nishta. Jnana nishta means you see it and it stays. No, there's no doubts. In fact, any doubts that come up are immediately answered as they come up. That's nishta, But initially when you see it, there's still room for doubt, so he has to explain how that is. So he says, Astu bodhaha aparoksha atra mahavakyat. He says, here in this discussion, let the knowledge be aparoksha. He says, this knowledge is aparoksha, leave it alone. The knowledge from the mahavakya that you get, let that be aparoksha. It's immediate direct knowledge. He says, astu, let it be. Bodhaha, this knowledge. He says, aparoksha, bodhaha aparoksha. Let this knowledge be aparoksha here, in the knowledge here that we're talking about. Let it be aparoksha. Where are we getting it? Mahavakya. Mahavakyat. So the knowledge that comes from the Mahavakya, let it be. It's aparoksha. It's aparoksha jnanam. It's direct, immediate knowledge. But then he says, tatapi asau, tatapi, even so. That being so, we accept it. Now, this is not Purvapaksha, this is the Siddhanta. We accept this. It's aparoksha jnanam. But tatapi, even so, he says, saha na dridaha. It's not firm. Dridha, dridha jnanam. When we say, maybe you hear all the time, we say jnana nishta. Firmness of knowledge. Another equivalent term is dridha jnanam. Dridha means firm. Steady, unshakable, dridha. Same as nishta. So we have jnana nishta, that rootedness in knowledge, and another term, dridha jnanam. Okay? So here he says, still, even though that aparoksha jnanam has taken place, that direct immediate knowledge has taken place from the Mahavakya, tatapi still, even so, asau na dridha. This is not firm. Shravanadi nam acharyahi punar iranat. Iranat. From the saying, from the prescribing, again and again, by the acharya of Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. He's talking about Shankara. In the next verse, he's going to cite one of Shankara's verses from Bhakyavritti. I think it's verse... Verse 98 of Vakyavritti, which we'd done a long time ago. Shankara talks about the repetition of Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana which are needed to do over and over again until one gets clarity of vision. Right? And it's also in the Brahma Sutras. They have a sutra on that. How the Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana has to be done again and again until the Sridhak Jnana takes place. But it doesn't say that in order to get Aparoksha Jnanam again and again, it's to clear the doubts again and again and again. So you see it over and over and over again from all of these different angles. So that's what he's saying here. He says, because the teacher, the Acharyahi, the plural there is for respect, means referring to Shankara. Because of Shankara's prescribing again, Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, right? So let the aparoksha jnanam, the direct immediate knowledge, take place, right? Let that take place, then the Mahavakya, but still the dritta jnanam is not there. Why do you say that? Well, because it's been prescribed, you know, to do again Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana in order to get that dritta jnanam. So that's the verse. Really clear? So now they have to go into a discussion on this. Aham brahmeti vakyarata. Aham brahmeti vakyarata. Bodo yavat pradhi bhavet. Bodo yavat pradhi bhavet. Shamadi sahitas tavat. Shamadi sahitas tavat. Abhyasek chavanadikam. Abhyasek chavanadikam. He says, Aham Brahma iti vakyarta bodhaha yavat dridhi bhavet shama adi sahitaha tavat abhyaset shravana adikam. He says, Aham Brahma iti vakyarta bodhaha yavat. Yavat means until. Until the knowledge of the meaning of the sentence, Vakya Arta Bodhaha, until the knowledge of the meaning of the sentence, Aham Brahma, I am Brahman, until that, Dridhi Bhavet, has become Dridha, very clear without doubt. Right? Because what will happen is this knowledge will take place and you see it. And it's like the example they use is, you see clearly, and I so remember this happening to me in India. You're listening, you know, and it's all so clear. And it's like the reeds of the swamp are pulled open, and you see all the water there clear as day, you know. And then you leave the class, and it's as though the teacher has taken his hands off the reeds, and they just click back together, and there's no water there. So what happens is that akhandakara vritti, that clarity of your own swarupa, your own being, takes place at the time of teaching. You see it. It means that teaching methodology is very powerful. In fact, the teacher also, especially somebody who's a master, like Swamiji, he will create, he'll put your mind in just a wonderful disposition. So it's cheerful. He creates for you a free, cheerful mind by telling you stories and jokes and all this kind of thing, you know. And gets everybody warm and all is well with me and good humor. And then he unfolds this vision, step by step, all of the time, bringing a little joke here, a little joke there, keeps the mind nice and relaxed and simple. Right? And then, boom, he makes you see. And that akhandakara vritti, that seeing takes place, you recognize what he's talking about. You see it. You know, that's the aparoksha jnanam, that's vritti vyapti. Your mind has been pointed in that direction, it sees it. Okay? But then you walk out the door of the class, after you've seen everything was so clear, you're enlightened. I remember really feeling that way. You know, I'd only been with him for going to classes for a few weeks, I think. And I was in Ahmedabad, and he was teaching. It was so wonderful, and I was just seeing it. And then one day, I saw the whole thing. And I walked out of the class, and I thought, it's over. I have this knowledge. All is well. All is well with me. And it was so clear. Everything was absolutely clear. And it was the most horrifying thing as I walked with some friends from the lecture hall to where Swamiji was giving the satsang maybe a quarter of a mile away in Ahmedabad. And as I was walking, I experienced my mind going clink, 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 clink. Until by the time I got to the satsang, I was just back into my regular samsari self. But it had been so clear, I could not believe that was happening to me, and I couldn't stop it. I couldn't stop it from happening. Because, you know, it was so clear, but then once your mind starts getting at it, what about this, and what about that, and what about this feeling, and what about that feeling, and how could this happen, and how could that happen? And your mind gets into this muddled mess again. Right? Even though, at the time of teaching, it had been so very clear. Right? But the dritta jnanam is not there. So he says here, yavat, until the meaning of the vakyarta, the meaning of this sentence, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, until that is dridha, that nothing can do that to your mind, that nothing can make your mind close over your knowledge. Because it actually closed over my knowledge. I was just completely confused again. I had no clue how that could have possibly happened to me, you know. Because it closed... I didn't have dritta jnanam at all. It was an isolated experience. It was an isolated aparoksha jnanam. Isolated because my mind didn't have the clarity and the logic to hold it. So he's going to go into all of that now. But let's just see this verse now. So until that becomes firm, shama adi sahitaha tavat, until that time, tavat, abhyasate, one needs to repeatedly practice what? Shravanadikam. Shravana manana nididhyasana. Until that dritta jnanam is there, you continue to do shravana, means you expose yourself to the pramana, so that you see it from this way, you see it from this way, see it from this way. You do manana, which I'll get into the details of this later. You do manana, which means that your mind then has to grapple with it. All of the different shravana, what shravana does is what it makes clear to you what the Shruti is saying. The more the Shravana unfolds, it unfolds clearly, the vision of the Shruti and all of the Purvapaksha Siddhanta within the Shruti itself. Like it could be the statement, the Upanishad could mean this, or it could mean that. So it's an analysis of what the Upanishad is actually saying. So it's the wielding of the pramana and becoming clear on what the Upanishad is revealing to you. Manana, this is a kind of a technical differentiation between Shravana and Manana. Manana is all of the doubts from other schools of thought, from worldly experience, from all of your own thinking. Why couldn't it be like this? Why couldn't it be like that? The Shruti says it's like this, but why couldn't it be like this? So that all of the different logical and experiential attacks to that understanding also have to be clarified. That needs to be understood experientially and logically. So those doubts, all of them have to be answered. It's not all right to have a doubt, right? It's fine to have a doubt, but it's not all right to just say, oh, I just had that doubt, forget it. It's not like that. It's that doubt is important for your dritta jnanam. If you have that doubt has to be worked on. So why? What is that? What is the doubt? You know? And let's see. Let's see if you're correct or not. Let's see if it could be like that. That doubt has to be grappled with. That's manana. Nididhyasana is the breaking of the dehatma buddhi, which has lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of identification of yourself as the body. Nididhyasana is the contemplation. You know, it's contemplation on your knowledge in order to break this dehatma buddhi that is so ingrained. So this shravana manana nididhyasana has to be done until that dritta jnanam is there. But not only that, shamadhi sahitaha. It has to be done together with shama, dhamma, upadhiti, titiksha, shraddha, samadhanam, all of these, right? Upadhiti. With all of the practice, the conscious handling of the mind in light of all of these values. Remember, viveka, vairagya, shama, dhamma, upadati. Shama is the control of the mind. Shama is the... I won't go through all of these right now. We don't have time. Just to define, just to give you the definition. Shama is learning how to let the thoughts in the mind come and go, rather than having them control you. Dhamma is if the mind grabs you and is now controlling you, you know, it's overwhelmed you. Dhamma is the ability to be able to contain it and not act it out. Right? That's Dhamma. So Shama Dhamma. Upadati. Upadati is keeping yourself focused. Focused. If your main desire is liberation, then that's your main desire. That's what you're doing. Everything else is secondary to that. Well, other things may be important that you're doing, just to your daily life, but they all circle around moksha. That's upadati. It can be called sannyasa also, but you can have guna sannyasa. It means, like if somebody takes sannyasa, that's an example of upadati. Means what they are doing, all what is the central to them is their knowledge, is gaining liberation. Titiksha is the ability to endure the opposites. You know, there's two types of opposites. One is the opposites that are like heat and cold. Those are the kind of opposites that sometimes you can like it that it's hot. Sometimes you can like that it's cold. Sometimes you don't like that it's cold. You know, or you don't like that it's hot. There's still these opposites that the world is throwing at you all of the time. Sometimes you like one extreme or the other. So those are certain type of opposites, but the ability for you to be able to accommodate them, to not be thrown off by the opposites. There's another kind of opposite, sukha and dukkha. That means where the opposites of happiness and sorrow. Happiness is meant to pleasure and pain. Pleasure causes pleasure, pain causes pain. So my ability to accommodate the pleasure and pain that the world throws, the pleasurable and painful circumstances that make up the world. Because otherwise you're asking for this to be like a heaven world. That this world is, as though this world's not supposed to give me painful, it's only supposed to give me pleasurable events. Sorry. not realistic, right? So, titiksha is that a kind of ability to be with that reality without being thrown off. So, titiksha. Samadhanam is a little different. Upadati is the long-term commitment to moksha, to liberation, where samadhanam is a mind that is able to stay focused. Like, for instance, coming to class, can your mind stay focused in the class? Or is it often thinking about this and thinking about that, so it doesn't have the capacity to focus on something? So samadhanam is necessary. In order for this knowledge to take place, the mind has to be available. If the mind is off running here and running there, then it's not in the class, then it's only going to be hearing snippets. So samadhanam you need in order to gain knowledge. And the last one is Shraddha. Shraddha means that it's really Ishwara Nugraha. There's a grace that says that gives your mind an emotional life, the go-ahead to pursue this knowledge, even though you don't know that it will bear fruit until it does. So what gives you that sense, this is what I want to do? This is what I believe this. Because it is, you believe it until you know it. Right? So that's Shraddha. It's belief pending understanding. It's enough belief or confidence to allow you to study deeply. Because to study Vedanta, for instance, it's not a little thing. It's not that you come to class one day and then you go away. It's a commitment. You know, so what gives your mind the willingness to make that commitment? right? Because you don't know until you know. So something tells you, so there's something inside that says, no, this is what I want to do. This, I have a sense, this is what I want. This will give me what I want. And so it's a belief pending understanding that gives you the fortitude to see it through. And so here it says, that's why it says, Shamadi. Shama-adi. So Shama is the first of this group of six. Shama, Dhamma, Uparati, Titiksha, Samadhanam, Shraddha. So he says, Shamadi Sahitaha means together along with Shama, Dhamma, Uparati, right? You do Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana until the meaning of this Vakya, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, is Dridha. Until your mind knows it. And your mind has to know it. See, this is another important thing. You can know it. Say if you're sitting in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Then you know, no problem. Right? So that Akhandakar Vritti is there.
Yeah.
All is well. But you have to know I am Brahman. Means I am the whole. So as I'm walking around in the middle of duality, you know, that aham brahmasmi recognition has to be there. Right? It's not just I'm Brahman when I'm, you know, in samadhi. I have to be able to be in samadhi with my eyes open. I have to be able to be, these words, we don't use the words like this, right? When we think of samadhi, usually we only think of nirvikalpa samadhi. When I'm in a meditative state of just pure awareness, pure being. Either Savikalpa or Nivikalpa Samadhi. But actually, I have to be in Samadhi all the time. Being in Samadhi all the time means that the Mitya, the Nama Rupas of this creation, that include the body, that include the Vrittis in the mind, right? Good and bad. All Mitya. The nama rupa, names and forms and everything that's included in this creation, including all my emotions, my perceptions, my imaginations, all the ahankar, all experiences are all nama rupa. All of those are mitya. Mitya means they are not separate or away from Brahman, just like the pot is not away from the clay. None of these experiences are away from me or covering me. You know, and so, but to have the dritta jnanam, I have to understand what all of these experiences are. I have to have a place for them. I have to understand. The mind has to understand how they fit into the scheme of things, right? I have to understand how they're all part and parcel of Ishvara, how they fit. You know, how it is. Like for instance, how it is that I can have jnanam, knowledge. And my mind can be upset. Mm-hmm. Without in any way shaking my knowledge or covering the aparokshitvam, the self-evident nature of myself. If I don't understand that, if I don't know that, then when my mind is upset or having a thought that one of those, a Swamiji says, then the mind has all kinds of funny thoughts. Or, okay, he can say that. Well, can I? Can my mind have a funny thought? You know, a thought that is unacceptable to me? Right? Can I see that in the light of this knowledge, in the light of Ishvara? Does it in any way cover or change or take away my own, the aparokshitvam of myself? Right? So all of that has to be clear so that creation doesn't have the capacity to shake my knowledge or to, as though, cover me. Then it's fine. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Shankara says, you know, the only person that knows whether a person is a jnani or not is themselves and their guru. They know. The person and the guru. There's another person, so the person's not a jnani, they're not going to know because they don't even know what a jnani is. Right? That's another problem. You don't know what a jnani is until you're a jnani. That's why it's Ishwara Anugraha, the grace of God, to even get a teacher, because you don't know if that person's a jnani or not. You don't even know what it is liberation is. It's all just a concept. You know, some idea of liberation, it means being free. What does being free mean? If you push a little bit, it all, you know, becomes a tangle. Right? So that dridha jnanam means that there's a tremendous amount of clarity, even in terms of Ishwara, what's going on in the creation, to such a degree that everything about my body, mind, sense organs, this complex, fits into my understanding of Ishwara. And it all has a place. Otherwise what happens is these things are left outstanding. They don't have a place, so you don't know what to do with it. You know? And you know what to do with it, then it fits into the scheme of things. So that's why it takes more than a day or a week or a month to become clear, because you have to understand all of the stuff that's going on in the mind also, and how to place all that. Okay, let's stop there. Mm-hmm. Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. That, I mean, they could say that and know exactly what that means.
Yeah, and they would know that. I mean, that would be the sense.
But see, if you say that, what you're, another way of saying that, just to make sure we're talking about this,
yeah,
the same is to know that I am the whole.
Right.
Right?
Right.
They would know that.
They would know that in an approach way?
You're not going... It depends on what you mean by that, because you're not going to have the experience of the Ishwara Upadhi, the Maya Upadhi, so in that way, no.
Yeah.
But you will know it in an aparoksha way in terms of Satya Mitya, in reference to all of your experience. Mm-hmm. All of this, the Mityatva, the dependent reality of all of this, in other words, when you're looking out at this creation through your sense organs, this room is enough, right? When this room represents a whole creation. So by just extension, you can extend the entire creation. So now in your experience of this, all of these names and forms in the three-dimensional space that you're experiencing in this room, none of it is separate from or away from the Sat-Chit which you are. And that's aparoksha. The being that you are. You recognize that your me is not contained. It's not contained. But you have to recognize it, because the Dehatma Buddhi The identification of the self with the body is so much that you always think of myself here, aware of you there. And that stops you from seeing that the reality that your being, the me, is not contained in this body, mind, sense organs. And your very personal sense of self is not contained. And there's nothing in your experience that's away from it. It's easy to understand the truth of it and exactly what I'm talking about if you limit it to a thought in the mind. Like, for instance, if I ask you to, you know, close your eyes and think of a meadow. Right, then it's easy to see
it's
that.
It's easy to understand that. In the dream thing, too. You know, that's really easy.
No, but it's more than understanding. Like, yeah. if I ask you to have a thought of something, mm-hmm. it's experiential, mm-hmm. isn't it? To see yourself as present and pervasive to the whole thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's true, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you know what? Mm-hmm. This is a thought. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at this world mm-hmm. through your sense organs, it's as much a thought as if you close your eyes and imagine a meadow.
It's a thought because it's a cognition.
It's a cognition.
Yeah. Okay.
So once you, so there is no difference in the recognition of the pervasiveness of your being,
right.
Whether it be in this cognition of the room, or if I close my eyes and imagine a meadow or whatever, right?
Because with the imagination, it kind of seems like it's more personal because only you were having it. But in a sense, I guess the thought only you were having that too, in a way. I mean,
no,
yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your experience of the room is through the vritti, right? Your experience of the meadow is the vritti. Your experience of the emotion is the vritti. But you're all willing to recognize the pervasiveness of yourself and the independence of yourself to the subjective thought, but to a cognition that's brought about from three-dimensional reality, which includes your body, you know, and all of this, then, because the Dehatma Buddhi is so strong, it can cloud the recognition of the freedom of your being.
And also I think that I mean, I never thought of it that way before, but also the fact that other people, you know, seem, I mean, you kind of share that knowledge with other people in a way, the cognitions, like, you know, I can say that's a chair, and they will say, yeah, yeah, I see that's a chair.
That's right, there's objective reality.
Right.
But nevertheless,
yeah.
Your being is pervasive to it because your experience
right.
is the vritti.
Right, right.
Okay, but then, so in that way, we would say everything that we're experiencing is just a vritti, and I pervade the vritti. But then we have to go out and prove that this world that is external to the subjective vritti is itself mitya. And that's by showing that there's nothing here. It's all infinitely divisible, that it all comes into being, goes out of being. So many logics to show you that there is no substance here. And that logic showing you there is no actual substance here substantiates the recognition of your pervasion.
Right, that's great.
Well, what does it do?
It substantiates the recognition of your pervasion to the vritti. Like, for instance, what I mean is, if I ask you to imagine a meadow, you shut your eyes, you imagine a meadow, okay? You can see I, the conscious being, am pervasive to that imagination. The imagination comes from me, is sustained by me, goes back into me. And I'm the self of the meadow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm saying is that this cognition of this room taking place through your sense organs
right now
is also a vritti. It's also a cognition. Because if your mind was daydreaming, then that's what you'd be seeing. So this, all you're seeing now is a cognition. And as much as you pervade the meadow cognition, you pervade this cognition of the room. There's no difference at all. Right? So now, the thing is, but then you'll say, yeah, but this room is objective. The cognition of the meadow is subjective. Right? Now, okay, that's true. Now, so, but let's get this one point straight first. Objective cognition, subjective cognition, both are cognitions. Mm-hmm. I pervade both. That's true. Mm-hmm. But then you're saying, yeah, but subjective cognition is not as real as the objective cognition.
Right.
I'm saying, no, there is no reality here. You can't find an object out here. So I can prove to you that there is nothing out here but existence and consciousness. Existence, consciousness. Because there is no object here. You can't find one.
But it's more real than dream.
It's only more real than dream in the sense that it lasts longer. Not in the sense of it being anything substantial. The dream is subjective, and in that way it doesn't last as long as this objective creation. Right? But when I'm in the dream, then I'm within that subjective reality. But that's not the point. Swamiji will just say it's a longer joke.
So I shouldn't give any more reality to the objective world than to the dreams. There's no more essence to it.
No, like it's in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the subjective reality is not as real as the objective reality from when you're comparing subjective to objective.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're comparing subjective and or objective to Atma,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
neither is more real.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And in both, the Atma, yourself, is equally changeless, equally pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And equally the substance.
Yeah.
Equally
the substance.
Hmm. That's the part that seems like a leap.
It isn't a leap, though, if you understand this progression.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it is your experience. It's a paroksha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the satyam mitya becomes a paroksha,
mm-hmm,
when you see that there is nothing here. These names and forms have no independent being apart from conscious existence. There's nothing, no independent being at all. That's the mitya.
Right.
And the satyam is satyam because there's nothing that you can do about it. You can't change it. You can't make it into anything other than what it is. It's free from time and space.
So the source of existence, Satyam, is not the creation, but is my own being.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a big
shift there, you know?
Total shift, yeah.
Because you usually think that the creation creates existence.
That's right. That's why in that Gita verse, what is night to a jnani is day to an ajnani. What is day to an ajnani is night to a jnani.
Okay.
It's the Sanskrit, it's ulta.
Yeah.
Everything's the opposite, you know, because the reality is that the reality is the pure being from which the whole creation has come, sustained, and resolves. It's not that the creation is the being, because the creation is, there is existence.
Mm.
Right? It's because there's existence and creation, you know, manifests from that.
But how does this recognition of the satyam, the pervasiveness of the satyam to the vritti, in terms of like, cognizing objects, I mean, how does that relate to this vritti vyapti and pavyapti?
Okay, but one thing.
Mm.
In cognizing objects,
yeah,
there's two things that are pervasive to any, we'll look at Chittabhasa, in any vritti. Whatever is in the vritti exists and it is known. That's sat chit. Sat is chit, chit is sat. Existence is consciousness, consciousness is existence. There's not two. They're both the same. They're only one thing. You know, it's not that existence has consciousness or consciousness has existence. It's consciousness is existence, existence is consciousness. So wherever existence is, consciousness is.
Mm-hmm.
They're one and the same. So every vritti, every experience that you have is sat chit. The vritti is, contents of the vritti is, and it is known, is known, is known. So say you look at, that's why sometimes, you know, I do this with a room. It is, it is, it is, it is. There is nothing, there is no experience that doesn't enjoy isness, being. That's the sat. There's no experience that doesn't enjoy knownness. That's the chit. Mm. Right? So that is the substrate reality of all experience.
So, Carol, I have this one doubt about this, about the vritti, vyapta, and
vyapti.
Vyapti and palavyapti. So, basically, it's just kind of, which is, I've been trying to figure out how to voice this question. The only thing I come up with is, like, how can the mind, which is time-bound and limited, have a vritti that pervades something that is not time-bound?
Because it would be like saying, how can the pot pervade the clay? Mm-hmm. Because the vritti also has no substance apart from consciousness. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, with any vritti, what is its focus? Is its focus on its own being or on name and form? So what if the focus is on its own being? Then what it's doing, in a sense, is erasing itself, even though it's still there because it still exists. Okay. But what it's doing actually is not erasing itself, it's erasing any content other than the truth of its being. And so there is no, it's not nothing else, right? So it's just focus. It's as though turning in on itself.
Right, but the vritti is nitya in itself.
Yeah, the vritti is nitya.
Its own reality is only dependent on satya. So
yeah.
It doesn't actually have an independent
existence,
right?
Nothing does.
Okay, there's still something little.
little not clicking.
Yes, I mean, this is all incredibly clarifying for me today, but there's still some little thing that. And I can't try to articulate what it is, but I can't.
Well, maybe if you think, like even if you start thinking of dreams or active imaginations or looking at this world, all of it is mitya. It's like a movie. It's a manifestation of knowledge. And in this manifestation of Ishvara, there are jivas. Mm-hmm. And all of the jivas have minds, right? But the jivas, along with their minds, are all mitya. Like if you have a dream, you dream the creation and the beings in the creation, they're all part of the creation. And the beings within the creation have minds. That's all part of the creation too. That's why we say the creation itself is sattva, rajas, and tamas. The maya itself has these three factors, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Because it has to account for the fact that in this maya, manifest creation here, there is something which can reflect consciousness. Like the mind and the sense organs reflect consciousness, whereas the physical body and the rug doesn't. Right? Now, if this mind, but the mind is still, it's sattva, it's made of pure sattva, but it's still maya completely. Mm-hmm. But maya, the reality of maya is mitya. Mm-hmm. Mitya means that you can't take it away from satyam. You can't separate it from Brahman. Mm-hmm. You can't separate the pot from the clay, right? Or if you use the other type, you can't take the snake off the rope, right? Because it has no being at all apart from it. But now the thing is that the sattva, which is the mind, reflects consciousness, right? So it can say, I am a conscious being. Right? The conscious being is the self-evident consciousness that's shining in the mind.
Yeah,
right?
It's a mental mistake then.
But now the mind that normally is using the sense organs or just memory or mental fluctuation is usually taking on modifications. Thought modifications that are then illumined by the consciousness. Mm-hmm. So the mind is constantly involved in vritti vyapti. It's always taking on this form or that form or this form or that form. And those forms are always illumined because of the sattva. Sattva reflects consciousness. So because of the chitta-bhasa, anything that takes place in the mind is known. Okay? But now, what about when instead of the mind taking on forms that are generated by means of knowledge or otherwise. It is now taking on a form generated by the Shabda Pramana, the Upanishad. Mm-hmm. Now what's happening is the mind is, instead of taking on an external form, is turning back on itself, on consciousness itself. Okay, so now, the Chidabhasa is still there, the Setra, the mind is still there. It's not gonna, you're not destroying the mind, but the content of the mind now has nothing to do with Maya. The content of the mind now is only Brahman. It's only the Atma. And so now when that happens, that's the Vritti-vyapti. It's not of an object. The Vritti-vyapti is of the subject. Mm-hmm. And so now the situation is awareness illumining a chidabhasa, a mind, mm-hmm. which is, has only for its content awareness. And so that chidabhasa, along with the vritti, is overwhelmed by the awareness of the subject. Mm-hmm. That's why they use the example of holding a candle flame up to the sun. Right? That is the vritti-vyapti, you know, where the mind has assumed the form of fire there, and then the sun itself, which is fire, is illumining that and overwhelms the candle flame. That's what happens here. So the vritti is still there, the vritti-vyapti has taken place, the chidabhasa is still there, you know, but it's meaningless.
Well, that's because there's no
other... Doesn't add anything.
There's no other object in the mind, or there's no other activity.
That's right.
I guess that my doubt was, how can this be? But the thing is, the answer, I guess, is just that because that's its actual nature.
That's right? its nature.
It's actually looking at it, just at its own nature.
At its own nature, yeah. There's no separation.
Yeah.
There's no separation between satyam and mitya.
Right.
No separation at all. Like you can't separate the clay from the pot or the rope. There's like no separation at all.
Right, that I just somehow...
Does it really just kind of go away then, the mind?
It doesn't go away, but it becomes what we call eti sukshma. Very, very subtle, because it doesn't have any content to be objectified. Mm. Right? There's no second content to be objectified. Mm. And so it's as though it's there, but it's as though erasing itself into the subject. So even though it's there, that's why when you come out of that nirvikalpa of state, then you can describe it fully. The mind can say, you can talk about it, and because the mind is there. It's the same in deep sleep. In fact, when you come out of deep sleep, you can talk about it, even though there was no karta, there's no subject object in deep sleep. But you can say, in deep sleep, you know, I don't even remember having any dreams. There's nothing going on. There's no subject object relationship. You can go on and on about it. No, but you can't go on and on about it when you're in deep sleep, because the mind is resolved, right? And it's in its avyekta, it's in its unmanifest condition. This is a little different than that, but it's the mind is resolved into awareness.
It's still there. It's epistemology of the vritti-vyapti and this kind of thing. Now, this isn't directly in the Upanishads, or is it somewhere?
I think Shankara probably talks about it, but certainly in the teaching tradition.
In the Shastra.
Yeah. And kind of it'll be in Vedanta Sara, in this Panchadashi, probably in Aparokshanubhuti, all of the books that get involved with the teaching methodology.
I mean, it's really sophisticated.
It's sophisticated.
I thought you said it was in the Brahma Sutras, or what?
There's a verse in the Brahma Sutras called Shravanadi Upadeshat. It's in the fourth sutra, fourth chapter, and that's talking about having to do Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, you know, until one gets Drudha. So that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, Kat, the way that they describe it in here, so maybe I just want to get clear about this, it makes maybe it sound like it's sort of two things, but in a sense, isn't it just that the mind is, I mean, everything is Satchidananda, everything has that.
As it's being.
Yeah, and so isn't it, is it more that the mind just doesn't have doesn't take a mitya, doesn't take a cognition of mitya, and so that's just there. That's such a
Well, you have to remember the sattva is there, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's an objective reality. The mind has an objective reality, even though it's mitya.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't disappear. Mm-hmm. If it just disappeared, then you wouldn't be able to have memory or recall.
Nice.
You see?
Okay. Yeah.
But just because just because it doesn't disappear doesn't make it any less mitya. That relative this relative reality just doesn't disappear on you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you analyze it, you see it has no, it has nothing. It has no substance at all apart from Brahman, from Satchit. Yeah.
Wow. Good material.
Details.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible details. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. How did they figure that out?
Yeah. Even, Shankara goes into all of this in the Bhashyas. It's just unbelievable. The Panchadashi is very good for this details. Vedanta Sara is another really important text.